Blog Talk Radio.
At Firefly Willows, LIVE, we're working hard to be your trusted source for fun, enlightening, and heart-centered information and community. And we're passionate about the art of transformative media, the new leading edge of communication in our highly connected, media-rich world. If you're passionate about facilitating change and you have gifts or ideas you'd like to share, come join us. Host a show or be a guest or connect us to an amazing speaker or teacher whose message is too good to miss. There's always room for courageous, knowledgeable changemakers, inspired artists, and new ideas. Let us know you're interested. Send an email to info@fireflywillows.com. We're Firefly Willows, LIVE, helping you find and shine your inner light. Firefly Willows, LIVE presents What's Your Prescription for Balance? Featuring your hosts, Mildred Lynn McDonald and Dr. Glenna Calder.
Hello, this is Mildred Lynn McDonald, and I'm your co-host for What's Your Prescription for Balance, live from Nova Scotia, Canada. In a few minutes, we'll be joining my co-host, Dr. Glenna Calder, in Halifax, Nova Scotia. When Dr. Glenna joins us, she's going to be sharing her insights and perceptions about the recent conference in Toronto called You Can Do It. Glenna shared with me that she was especially impressed with what Carolyn Miss and Bruce Lipton had to say. So I'm very excited to connect with Glenna and get her feedback. In the second segment of our show, it's all about birthing and the birthing process. We'll be talking to Karen Reed from Nova Scotia. She is a birthing doula. When Karen speaks, you can really tell that this work is a calling or a vocation. She's warm, she's highly skilled, insightful, intuitive, and passionate about sharing what she's learned from working with many, many mothers through the pregnancy cycle and beyond. This is Mildred Lynn McDonald. Thank you for listening to What's Your Prescription for Balance? And we hope that you enjoy the show today. So, without further ado, I'd like to welcome my co-host, Dr. Glenna, to talk about the Yes You Can conference in Toronto. And a little later in the show, we'll both welcome the amazing birthing doula, Karen Reed. Hello, Glenna. Are you there?
Hi, Mildred Lynn. I'm here.
Hi. So I can't wait to hear about the conference. We talked a little bit about it. And from my understanding, the two people that really stood out for you are Bruce Lipton and Carolyn Miss.
Definitely. As you know, Carolyn Mace is one of my favorite authors and speakers. And I have read, I think, most, if not all of her books. And so it was really exciting to go and hear her speak. It's been a few years since I've heard her, and the same for Bruce Lipton. So there was about 10 or 15 speakers, but those two, I think, had, in my opinion, the most profound things to say and to pass on to the 4,000 people that were there.
4,000 people. Did you sit up the front or did you sit at the back?
I was pretty close. I was up on a balcony, some of it right in the front, and it was in the Roy Thompson Theater in Toronto, which is a beautiful theater, and there is no bad seat in the house.
Oh, excellent. So what did you really like about Carolyn? You pronounce her name differently than I do. Pronounce
Mace.
It for me. Carolyn Mace. Okay. What did you really like about Carolyn Mace?
Well, I really enjoy her teachings because she's a straight shooter, so she's very direct, and some people might not resonate with that, but I certainly do, because her desire and her calling is to speak the truth, and she's no particular religion, but has studied theology for 40 years now, all of the religions, and she is from a Catholic background and lived in a convent until she was 29. And her other passion is history. So I find it really interesting to speak about any topic in history, which is her other passion. So she's definitely a straight shooter. She shoots from the hip, and I think she's got, I mean, with her books, her first one many people might have heard of is Anatomy of the Spirit, where she correlates all the different religions with her seven chakras and looks at the commonalities within them all and correlates those with different illnesses in the body, which is really interesting because her background is a medical intuition. She worked with a medical doctor, and he would use her tools by calling her up and having her help do a scan of her patients, of his patients, so he would be able to give them the next step of what kind of a scan or test they should get to find out what's going on. So in her last book, which is What is Your Archetype?, mm-hmm. which is what I spoke about mostly in Toronto, was it's our privilege and our obligation to know ourselves, to know our souls. And the reason why she feels this is so important is that if we know ourselves and can understand ourselves from an archetypal point of view, we're better able to have compassion for ourselves and navigate through this world better, because then we'll know, why am I showing up like this? Why are these situations showing up in my life over and over again? Why am I attracted to different people or different jobs or different situations? And if we know ourselves better, we can know other people better and have more compassion towards other people, which is a win-win for everybody. And so her archetype book speaks about, and the best way to describe it is maybe a group of traits that it's almost like a family of traits. So one, for example, one archetype would be the healer. Another would be the warrior. Another would be the victim. And we have more than one archetype that we show up in that we've come into the world with. So she has different tools that you can study and find out which ones you show up with. So she kind of gives the example.
Sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking about the archetypes when I'm thinking about our listeners. So, for example, the healer archetype probably would have a description of characteristics or traits, and a person could read that and maybe see themselves within that. And then maybe their perception would change or about themselves or a situation. Is that how
that's
it works?
That's exactly it. And to know why they're drawn to certain roles and certain situations and why they participate and show up the way they do in relationships. And within each archetype, even though two people might be in the archetype of healer, there's going to always be differences from person to person within that family archetype called healer.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, if a person is interested and intrigued by these different types of archetypes, is there a website that you can go to or a book to read? Did she share any of that information?
Yes, one of her students who had been following her and doing her workshops for years has joined with Caroline and developed a website called www.archetype.com, and you can go in there and you answer a set of questions, and it will put you in and let you know what percentages. It breaks it down into percentages, so you might be 40% a spiritual seeker, 10% warrior, 30% athlete. And then within that, you can read about the different archetypes.
Did you do that for yourself?
I did. I've done it twice. I've done it recently and about 6 months ago. Mm-hmm.
And did you find it useful and relevant?
I did. I mean, it was very relevant. I showed up as the athlete archetype and the spiritual seeker.
Okay.
And as I've been an athlete all my life, from marathon running to different type of sports, and still play sports now, so that was relevant. And a spiritual seeker, I read books, spiritual books, and so I wasn't surprised what came up.
So in order to get there, was it questions you answered, or was it an online survey that you plugged in, I agree, disagree sort of thing?
It gives you it would ask a question and give you four different situations, so you'd pick which one that you would respond to in a certain situation.
Oh, I'm going to have to try that myself. When we talked before, you mentioned that there's two archetypes that are appearing now. I think it was the was it? The vampire and the zombie archetype?
Yeah, those
that were
two
new
are very...
ones that were coming in, or
yeah, they've been coming in for decades. And as Caroline speaks about, is that many archetypes that are showing up today, the modern world of today, might have also been around 30, 40 years ago. Some of them aren't. So with time, different archetypes fade, and certain ones, though, stay. And the vampire and the zombie are still here, but how we see them is differently. We now romanticize the vampire and the zombie. And the other one that has changed a bit is the priest archetype. People tend to look at that differently for some reason. It has switched. And
so it sounds like she's created a wonderful framework that you can plug yourself into and maybe understand things about life and yourself and other people a little bit differently. And the big overall umbrella is compassion. Through understanding, you'll gain compassion.
Exactly. And she feels that this is the language of the soul is how, and she feels at this point in time, this modern world, we're in a different stage. We're not in the Newton stage of reasoning. We're in a stage of psychic intelligence. So the more we know ourselves, the more we'll know the world around us.
Oh, I love that. And tell me, what about Bruce Lipton?
So Bruce Lipton, his most recent book was The Honeymoon Effect. Although some of the listeners might have read his best-selling book, Biology of Belief, where what our thoughts are and what we believe become our biology. So this book, The Honeymoon Effect, is based on how natural it is for us to be in relationships, that we're programmed to be in relationships. So he starts back in our childhood between the ages of 0 and 7 and how we use the subconscious mind to program to learn how to function and how to survive in society. And it's very useful because we need to learn how to survive in a group, in a tribe, or a society. So we load up programs, basically, into our subconscious mind from our moms, from what we see, from friends on the playground, from teachers. And then as we go into 6, 7, 8 years, we start to function from our conscious mind, which is our prefrontal cortex. And that is what's known as a conscious mind, because with that we function through our creativity, we form desires and goals and what we want out of life. So they estimate, doing various studies, that we function mostly 5% in our prefrontal cortex, which is our conscious mind, and 95% of the time we're functioning from our subconscious programmed mind, where he likened it to a jukebox, where you press a button and a response will come out to deal with the situation that's here. And it doesn't serve us very well, because 70%, they estimate, of that subconscious mind are made of beliefs that are disempowering for us. They don't serve us, and they don't help us reach our goals, desires, and we're not using our creative mind.
So it sounds like we have the opportunity to change the song selection in the jukebox.
Exactly. If we're using our present conscious mind, we're going to make decisions and respond in a way that's aligned with our goals and our beliefs and our thoughts, rather than a belief that doesn't serve us.
Does he offer, Glenna, a way to get to shift that equation, a way to tap into more of our potential? When he was talking, he presented this concept, he presented the research, he presented the impacts of the research, and did he present a way forward?
Well, he did. One way is to acknowledge that when we're existing and functioning day-to-day in our conscious mind is to be aware of the feelings that we get when we're around certain people. We recognize other people's chemistry, our body does, and so we get gut feelings, good vibes or bad vibes or neutral vibes. That's our conscious mind serving us and trying to get our attention. So one example is the Dalai Lama. They've studied his brain, and his prefrontal cortex is 3 times larger than the average person because of the mindfulness practices and the meditation that he performs. So you can actually increase that part of your brain.
That's amazing. Oh, my. I wonder how they measure. They did that by...
Yeah, well, they put electrodes on the brain and through brain waves, okay. watching how much of his brain is functioning, and they can measure it by scans, so they actually do scans. brain scans.
That sounds like something everybody would like to have happen.
Maybe not. Yeah. I thought you meant testing. Oh. Some people might not want to get a scan of their brain to find out.
Oh, yeah, that's possible, too. So how many speakers were there? Maybe about 15 speakers? Or
approximately 15 speakers at the conference.
Okay. And these two really appeal to you. Now, someone else could go to the conference and maybe another couple of speakers would really resonate with them, depending on their interest level and who they are and perhaps where they're vibrating at this current time.
Exactly.
Is that fair?
For example, yeah, Wayne Dyer was the first keynote speaker. He was great. Greg Braden, which is an excellent speaker, he was there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them tie into each other because Greg Braden spoke about, he actually went into he's traveled very much throughout the world into holy places. So he has actually, he showed us different interviews with women that were between the age of 120 and 130 years old. And the commonality in those women, when he asked why they're so healthy and why they're still living into these advanced years, is the compassion and the love that they feel they have.
Oh, okay. That sounds like a whole other topic we could even do a radio show on.
I think it is.
Wouldn't that be good? But right now, what we have to do is we need to sync up with Karen Reed in Nova Scotia, our birthing doula. And before that, we'll go to a quick little ad. And then to ease us all into our beautiful interview with Karen Reed, I have The Creative Island, that song about Cape Breton Island, and the words are particularly nice. So, Greta, how do you feel about that? We'll connect as soon as we do the ad, and we play a little music, and we hope that our listeners are enjoying the show so far.
Looking forward to it. Talk soon.
Okay.
Yes, we've added to our lineup of lively, thought-provoking shows, but don't forget our original Sunday morning lineup at 10:30 a.m. Join us for Healing Conversations with Mildred Lynn MacDonald every first Sunday. Revolution with Heisey Lutmers every second Sunday. Convergence with John Carosella every third Sunday. And our popular on-air call-in show, the fourth Sunday of every month. We're excited. Give us a listen as we continue to create new and entertaining ways for you to shine your inner light. Join us at Firefly Willows, LIVE.
Everybody to the show. We're really excited excited because we have Karen Reed here, who is a birthing doula, and joining Karen in Nova Scotia is Dr. Glenna. Hello, Glenna.
Hi, Mildred Lynn.
Hi, Karen. How are things with you this evening?
I'm wonderful, thank you. It's a wonderful evening here in Nova Scotia.
Beautiful. And I hear that you have been present at the birth of three bouncing babies.
Yes. Yes, the weekend was very, very busy. It was a celebration weekend in Canada, and it was a celebration for many couples here in Nova Scotia this weekend as they welcomed their babies, and I happened to be present at three of the births.
For our listeners out there, can you share what is a birthing doula and how would a birthing doula be different than a midwife? Because I believe many people are familiar with the term midwife. So can you share your perspective on that with us?
Sure. I'm certified with doula organization called DONA. And so I'm going to refer to their description as a doula because I think they've described it way better than I could. And so I think one of the most important things is that a doula recognizes that birth is an experience, a life experience that a woman will never forget. It'll remain with her for the rest of her life. And a doula understands the physiology of birth. She understands the normal process of how the body labors and what that process is. And she also understands the emotional component to that process. She understands the emotional, sometimes it appears like a roller coaster that a woman is on during her labor and birth process. She also assists the woman in preparing for her birth. So a doula will work with a woman and her partner during pregnancy to help them prepare and to help them create a vision of what they would like their birth to, or how they would like, what they'd like their birth to be, or how they'd like their birth to unfold. And a doula, who is very wise, will always work with the couple in a way so that they don't attach to that vision and don't attach to making a plan and creating a plan of how their birth is going to be, because birth, like any life event, unfolds in its own way, and birth can often be very unpredictable. And so a doula will make a couple aware of that, that it's not going to necessarily unfold in the way that they might expect it to. The doula then provides emotional and physical support in the sense of helping women to cope with the discomfort of the labor process. And the doula is there continuously throughout the labor and birth process. And that's very, what would I say, it's a very special part of my doula work, is being that continuous support. Because the nurses go and nurses come and the doctors change shifts, and at our hospital, the midwives are on call and they change shifts. And so a doula is that one consistent person that is always there from the beginning to the end. And they also have that relationship established during pregnancy. So it's really that consistency of care is just really an important part of the process. Then the doula also facilitates communication between the laboring woman and her partner and her clinical care providers. And that is really, really an important part of the doula work. Because a woman, when she's in labor, she's in an altered state and can't always think clearly. Her left brain that absorbed all that knowledge during pregnancy may not be functioning very well when she's in labor. And so having someone present to help her understand the questions that she needs to ask and to give her information that she needs is really, really important. And I think the other important part of a doula is she really encourages the woman's partner to be involved in the process to the amount that they want to be involved. Some partners, you know, want to be really involved in doing everything, and some partners even want to, you know, have their hands on the baby when it's born. And other partners are not comfortable with that. And so a doula respects wherever a partner is in their process and supports it. So that's, I think, pretty well sums up the role of a doula. And then a midwife, I'm not really a good person to do this comparison because I have very limited experience with midwives because midwifery is very recent in our province here. And so I only have experience with the midwives here in this province at the hospital that I work at. And so their role is as a clinical care provider. So they see a woman during pregnancy and support her during labor and birth and 6 weeks postpartum, but in a care provider role. Unless there's a medical reason, women here who are part of the midwifery program, they don't see a doctor. They see midwives for their complete care. So a doula and a midwife, there is some crossover in our roles, but our training is completely different. Our midwives here are degree midwives, very well-trained, highly skilled midwives. Doulas don't go through a degree program to become a doula. You're trained. You go through a training program, and then you work through a certification process, but it is by no means anything in comparison to how a midwife is trained. But the crossover comes from the way that the care is given. Doulas follow very much that part of the midwifery model of care. So we provide a lot of birth preparation, physical and emotional preparation for women, and midwives do the same. And then during the labor and birth support, there's a lot of crossover because we provide a lot of the same physical support, a lot of the same comfort measures. We provide the same emotional support. So there's a lot of crossover there. So for me here, I can only speak for myself, I love working with the midwives because I believe that the way that we work together really complements each other's roles. And that way, when a woman has a midwife and a doula, they're getting complete care, like very holistic care, because everything is being covered. They're getting the medical care that they need, but they're also getting that holistic approach as well.
That sounds wonderful. I was sitting here and I was absolutely fascinated. Thank you so much, Karen. That was a wonderful description. You've educated me.
Oh, that's good. My pleasure.
I think you did a wonderful job of explaining the differences. Being a woman that had two labors, and the first one was with a midwife, and the second, I had a doula. I had Karen as my doula, and they were completely different experiences for many reasons. And obviously, I would say my second was my favorite because it was 26 hours shorter. But the difference, I think, would be that continued support. It's really nice to have one continuous person that's looking out for you there rather than spending some time with you and your husband alone. And so I think that was a great explanation. So Karen, could you tell us a little bit about how a doula works within the conventional medical system?
Oh, that's a brilliant question. I think that in order for a doula to support birth in the conventional medical system, in our medical system that's in North America, she needs to have a really good understanding of the medical system and how it works, and she needs to have a really good understanding of the normal physiological birth process and then how they can work together. And one of our biggest challenges is that there's a lot of dissension between the two. And, you know, oftentimes our medical system is not seen as supporting normal physiological birth. But I believe, and in my experience, I've been a doula here at a tertiary care hospital for 10 years, I've seen very clearly how the two can work together. And as a doula, when you have that understanding, you can facilitate the process. So for me, because I have an interest in psychology and have studied a fair amount of psychology, and one of my favorite parts of psychology is studying archetypal patterns, I've approached it through archetypal patterns. And the two main archetypal patterns that I have looked at it through is the masculine and the feminine. So I'm not talking about gender. I'm talking about the energy patterns. And so if we were to look at birth, birth is in alignment with the feminine energy pattern. And so our when we think of the feminine is all about process. The feminine looks at long-term outcomes. So our bodies are designed to grow and birth our babies and for mom and baby to be healthy and to have healthy long-term outcomes. That's the way I believe our bodies are designed to work. That's the feminine. And then the feminine is also very nurturing and is intuitive and flexible and is very much about natural cycles and rhythms. The feminine is liminal. That means in the meantime, being with what is, the space in between. And when a mother is giving birth, she's in between. She's in between being a full-fledged mother, because especially if she's a first-time mom, because she's never been a mother before. So she's in the in-between, and she's stepping from, to use the old language, she's stepping from the maiden into the mother, two archetypal patterns. And so she's in the in-between. She's not quite fully a mother yet, because she's not a mother until she births her baby, and then she also births herself as a mother. So that's the feminine. And then the feminine is about being present and being open. And the feminine strength is the emotional strength. It's the deep strength that comes from within that can just face anything in the world. And the feminine is also very much about being, not about doing. So when I look at birth, I see the normal physiological process of birth fitting very much with the feminine. It's a feminine process. But as with anything in life, we need a balance of the masculine and feminine. Our medical system, the way we operate our medical system in North America, doesn't have a lot of the feminine in it. It is very focused in the masculine. And masculine is about action, is about control. It can be seen as being aggressive. Its strength is very much physical strength and power. And the masculine is very linear thinking. We go from A to B, and this is how we do it. So it's very goal-oriented. But in our medical system, the goals are very short-term goals. They want healthy mom, healthy baby. That's the goal. That's the feminine's goal, too. But there's two different ways to go about it. Healthy mom, healthy baby for the masculine means keeping everything safe and controlling it. And that's not the feminine. The feminine is moving with what is and how the body works. And the masculine is also very technology focused, very much about grandiosity and, you know, very much about saving lives and being the protector. And so when we have an imbalance of the masculine and the feminine is not allowed to flourish and to be what she needs to be. So if we look at a river, an analogy in everyday life, I love this analogy. It's not mine. I learned it somewhere else, but I don't remember where. And it's about a river. And so if you look at a river, the banks and the bottom of a river would represent the masculine. It's the container. It's the structure. And the water that flows freely within those banks is the feminine. But if we dam the river, we've obstructed the flow. We're trying to control it. We're trying to divert it. The water's not allowed to flow freely. And I think a lot of times that's what happens, because the masculine is so focused on technology and keeping everything safe that a woman, when she's in labor, her labor is diverted from its natural process into using technology, and she's taken outside of herself. So when a doula understands how the medical system works and understands how birth works and has an understanding of the masculine and feminine, then you can bring the two together. And that's what I do in my work. And it has been very successful. I've had just a lot of success of being able to create that balance by working with the masculine and the feminine energies within our system, have been able to support women to be able to have beautiful, empowering birth experiences. So I believe that it is vital as a doula to have that understanding to work within our present system.
I've never thought about it that way, Karen. I mean, having two babies myself and working with women as a naturopath, I've never seen it that way, but I think that's very helpful for myself and I'm sure for many people listening.
Yeah, and you can also take that feminine, masculine archetype and apply it to different areas. So when you were speaking, Karen, that's what I was thinking about. I was thinking about the birthing process, but also how we could take that and apply it to other areas of our lives. So thank you for that. I have another question I want to ask. Some people, or most people in society today, look at the birthing process as something that's happening to them rather than the birthing process being a normal and beautiful and loving part of the life cycle. So could you share your thoughts on that?
Yes, I think it relates to what I was just talking about, because if we still look at it through the masculine and the feminine, in our culture, women are taken outside of their bodies. They get ultrasounds very early on, so they're not even encouraged to trust their bodies to grow their baby or trust themselves to know that their baby is okay. We don't teach women that. We teach them that they need an ultrasound and that they don't have that wisdom, they don't have that knowledge, they don't have that connection with their body. That's what we're teaching them. But actually, they do have that connection. But because we're not teaching them about that and we're not encouraging them to tune into that and to be in tune with their bodies and their babies, they see it very much as a process that is happening to them. And that birth is not safe, and it's not safe to be pregnant. Pregnancy needs to be managed, and birth needs to be managed. It needs to be controlled by technology. And that's very much the masculine. But the feminine is about trust. It's about honoring the process and honoring the body and supporting the body and being in touch with your body, in tune with your body, so that you know what your body needs to support what your baby needs. And I've heard many times medical professionals say to my clients during labor, your body doesn't know what to do, but we do. So we will help you. That's the masculine. That's the masculine. They believe they have the power, that the woman is helpless. She's a victim and she's helpless, and they need to keep her safe because her body can't do that. What that leads to is, after women have experienced birth, and I have the good fortune of traveling a lot, and so I'm in a lot of airports and on a lot of planes, and I meet a lot of people, and when they find out what I do, people just want to share their birth story. So I get to hear birth stories from around the world. I feel very privileged to have that opportunity. And I hear the same theme over and over and over, and it's very disturbing to me. What I hear women say is that my birth wasn't what I wanted it to be. And then they go on to tell me their story. But what they don't realize is the part that they played in it, that they had a part in how it unfolded. And we think that in our culture, we think that if we are passive and if we hand our power over to the experts, everything's going to happen the way that we want it to happen, because they see that that's the safe way to do it. That's the best way to do it. Technology is looking after it. So we're going to hand our power over, and then everything's going to unfold just as I want it to unfold. But that's not the way that it happens. And people don't understand that when we're passive and we hand our power over, we're still participating in life, but we're participating in by not being active. By not being active, we don't keep our power. We've handed our power away. So we're still having an impact on the outcomes, but we have no control over the outcomes because we aren't an active participant in the process. That just makes me very sad, and that is exactly why I do the work that I do, because I've learned in my own life experience that when we're an active participant in life, it may not unfold the way that we want it to unfold, but we have a part in making the decisions and being with that process. We're in the process. We're not outside of it. It's not something that is happening to us. We are part of it, and we can take personal responsibility for our part in the process, and that's empowering. That's empowerment. That's empowering.
Now, Karen, I have a question. It won't go away. And it was when Glenn and I both gasped at the part where you said, sometimes the mother is told your body doesn't know what to do. If I may ask, what would be the response of a doula, or have you already coached the mom to be in this area?
I work with my clients to be able to have their power. My work is about empowerment. So my goal is to help my clients stay in their power. And when a woman is vulnerable and is in labor and maybe not feeling safe in this situation when she's just been told that her body doesn't know what to do, my role is not to argue with the care provider. My role is to turn to the woman and to encourage her and to remind her of what her body has done already. Your body has brought you to this point. Nobody else has brought you to this point. Your body and you, you know, and your baby have all worked together. It's been a team effort to come to this point. And so that's what my role is. To challenge the care provider or to try to change the care provider's mind, that's not my role. Not at that time. Because right when a woman is in labor, my role is to be with her and to support her. And I find that the approach that I take is effective, because what it does sometimes is make the care provider stand back and reassess what they've said. That's very helpful. And it can change the course of how it unfolds.
Wouldn't we love to have you with every situation, Karen?
If only I could be in multiple places at once.
You've answered some of my next question, which was, how does working with a doula empower our mothers to be? And I guess an add-on to that would be, and how does this empowerment seep into other areas of their life?
Mm-hmm. What a great question. Well, that ties in with what we were just talking about. I think a doula needs to be in her power. She needs to be working and living from her own power. She needs to be living an empowered life. And part of living an empowered life is being in touch with her own masculine and feminine and understanding the relationship between the two and understanding how they need to be in balance. I think that for anyone, not only doulas, I think even in doctors, I think naturopaths, every care provider can benefit from this being in your power, because every day we have opportunities to empower people around us, not just in our work. So I think by living an empowered life, that's how we empower others. I don't think I can intentionally set out to empower another. I think it's the way that I approach the situation. I think it's the way that I feel within myself, and I think that's what comes out. I'm not sure if I'm being very articulate, but it's hard to describe.
Well, I think from going through and having you attend the birth of my son, Luke, I can attest to the fact that I think it was obvious to me how much work you've done, because your confidence in your own skills really helped me be confident in my ability to birth my baby.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're bang on it. And your presence, you're extremely present and focused. And it was just obvious to me how passionate you were and how much you believed in me as a mother to be,
mm-hmm.
which trickles out into the birthing process.
I understand what you're saying, and I agree. And I have found that that approach for me, I'm not saying it's the approach for everyone, but this is the approach that works for me, through living an empowered life and being present and focused, I find that there's so much less conflict between the medical professionals and myself. I've been able to establish a really good, healthy, strong, effective working relationship with the hospital here, with the birth unit staff, with the doctors. And I believe that it comes from that empowerment, because when I'm in my power and I'm in the birth room, I'm not a threat to anybody in the room. Because I'm not threatened by anybody in the room. I'm in my power. And so I'm not causing anybody to be defensive. And so then there's no barriers, and we can all work together to serve the woman who is giving birth.
And I know that during my labor that there was a little bit, I felt a little bit of a tension with some people in the room, but watching how it didn't affect you and how calm you remained, it helped me just focus more on my birth and not get wrapped up in any tension or drama that was going around outside of me. Having you with that constant calmness really, really helped.
Yes, yes. Because a person that is in their power doesn't get caught up in other people's stuff. So whatever is going on the birth unit, and I mean on any given day, it's a tertiary care hospital, so there can be lots of stuff going on. But I don't need to be a part of that. That has nothing to do with me. My relationship is with the care providers and how they're caring for my client. So if I don't become involved in their stress, then their stress is outside of our situation.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how I felt.
You know, I can't go into a birth room and make sure that there's no tension in the room, because I have no control over other people's stuff. But when you are in your own power, you can work with what is.
I'm thinking about empowerment, and I'm thinking about the mom, and I know we talked about this a little bit. What rights does the mother-to-be have, but she doesn't realize that she has them? Maybe because she's handed over her power, maybe because she's not educated in that area. It seems to me that it's really important as a mother-to-be, or maybe any human being, to understand that they have rights.
Yes, and I think that's one of the biggest illusions in our culture, is for some reason women feel that they don't have rights. And that just makes me really, really sad, because when a woman doesn't feel she has rights, then she's not in her power. She feels powerless. And so when it comes to giving birth, in Canada, I don't know about in the U.S., but in Canada, a woman has a right to choose. She has the right to say no to any medical procedure concerning her and her baby as long as she's carrying the baby in her uterus. And so a lot of women don't realize that's their right. They think that when a doctor says, okay, well, you have to do this, whatever it is, they say, oh, okay, I have to do that because the doctor told me to do that. They don't realize they have the right to question that or to say no to it. And that's disempowering women. That is manipulating women to not make them aware of their rights. That's having power over them. And to me, that doesn't seem right. That just, it really bothers me. And so that's another reason why I do the work that I do, is to help women educate themselves about their rights and to be able to make informed decisions. Because part of the earlier question that Glenna asked that I don't think I really addressed and answered, she asked about empowerment rippling throughout life. What I find is that when women know their rights and are really well-informed and can sit down and have really intelligent, well-thought-out, well-researched discussions with their care providers, that's empowerment, because they're part of making those decisions about their care and how they're going to be cared for. then they make those decisions during pregnancy and have that relationship with their care provider during pregnancy, they can carry that into birth because they've had the practice. And so when they're in birth, they can have the same discussions. They can ask questions. And as a doula, if they don't remember the questions, I can be there by their side to say, I think you wanted to ask this question. And they can ask the question. They can be part of the process. You know, there's a wonderful quote from a woman, an Aboriginal woman. Her name was Lila Watson, and this was her quote, is the response to mission workers when they came to Australia. And she said, if you've come to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you have come because your liberation is bound up with mine, then let's work together. That's mm-hmm. how I feel about the women that I work with. We work together and we liberate each other. And when women are liberated and are liberated through their pregnancy and their birth, they take that into their parenting. They empower their children. They empower other women. And every time that they do that, they're liberating. They're liberating themselves and they're liberating future generations because it's all going to ripple out.
Karen, you're empowering me and I'm going to vote for you. What do you think, Glenna?
You won't be let down, trust me. I voted for her 15 months ago. And I don't know what I would have done. It was such a wonderful experience to have her working with me and my husband and our family, really. It was beautiful. And I guess you hit something right on. I think that I was thinking of a situation during my pregnancy when something came up, and the usual course was to have a medical intervention. I planned that for my pregnancy or for the labor. And I did my research and I let my conventional medical doctor know that I was going to take that path. And I was very prepared with information. And because I presented it very confidently, my medical doctor, although I'm sure she was very shocked at the decision I was making, did not push me and just instead said, okay, well, I've got to give you a pamphlet on it. And that was it. And she supported me right through the pregnancy and the labor and didn't pressure me, didn't second guess me. And I truly think it was because I made my decision for myself and it was for the best interest of my baby. I believe that. I think it would have went differently if I hadn't really spent time with the decision, months with the decision like I did. I guess I came to that decision with my own inner wisdom and intuition and not looking for external approval or support. Karen, I know you get a lot of questions, like you mentioned, on airplanes and anytime anybody finds out what you do. What would be some of the more common questions?
The questions just by the general public or people that are interested in having a doula?
I would say the people most interested in having a doula.
Well, I think I could break that into a couple categories because men and women have different questions. One of the first questions when I interview, one of the first questions the men want to know is they want to know if I'm going to tell them what to do or not. They want to know if I'm going to take over their role and push them out of the way. And so that's a really interesting question to me, and I love answering that question. Because that's not how I see my role at all. My role is to see them as being an important part of the process. I really honor the partner's role in the process of birth. And I always joke with them and say, well, I'm going to be at the birth with them, but I'm not going home with them. So my role is to make sure that they can work well as a team during pregnancy and birth so that they can go home and continue to work as a team to raise their baby and to work together. So that usually puts them at ease when I explain that I'm there to support them to be the best that they can be and so that they can be the best in their role. And I might have suggestions of things that they could do to provide more support. And when I put it that way, then most men are really, really understand that because that's what they want to do. They want to provide support. So when they know that they'll be supported to do that, then they feel a lot more comfortable. And then for women, because in our city here, we have such a high epidural rate at our hospital, a lot of women, their first question is, are you going to stop me from having an epidural? And my answer is no, that my role as a doula is to help them get all the information that they need and to learn about themselves and their own belief systems and what they, you know, what they want for themselves, a clear vision for their birth and what's important to them in their birth. And then they can take all that information and they can make the choice that is best for them. And I will support them in whatever choice they've made because that's the best choice for them. So that helps them see that I'm not out to stop them from doing something. I'm there to help them and support them to be in their power and to make the choices that are right for them.
And so you find with that, just the conversation with the husbands, I guess they can relax a little bit too, I would think, knowing that there's a third person in there that's working with them and that's part of their little team.
Yes. And then the other question that I often get asked that relates to that working as a team is, I don't know where this comes from. It must come from somewhere in our culture, the way that we're socialized. Maybe it's the way we interact with our medical system and have given them power. But they'll ask me if I'm going to advocate for them. And a doula is an advocate. She's an advocate for the couple. But I would never advocate for the couple that I'm working with unless in a specific situation where something is happening and they ask me to. I see my role is to support them in advocating for themselves. That's the empowerment. Advocating for somebody is taking their power away, unless it's a situation where they can't. Then that's different. But in a situation where someone can advocate for themselves, I see it as my role to support them to do that. And then they feel the empowerment because they help themselves.
That's a really good point. The three questions you picked were really interesting and really different from each other. But as I think about moms-to-be in my practice, one of the common questions is, I'm not sure if my husband will want a doula. They're very concerned about how their husband will feel that their husband's being replaced.
Mm-hmm.
I think our listeners are really going to enjoy those questions.
Yes, because a doula that is a very effective doula will never replace the partner because the partner's role cannot be replaced. The partner plays a very important role in the birth process, in the entire process, but in the birth process, very important role. And a very effective doula and a wise doula would never take that away from the partner because that's disempowerment.
As you were speaking, Karen, I was thinking, my heavens, I wonder if there's such a thing as a life doula.
Oh, I think there is. I think doulas can fill many different roles.
Yeah.
I remember traveling, like it's life experience, you know, like, yes, my work is as a doula, but this is how I live. I live it every day of my life. We were traveling in the Middle East a few years ago when that volcano erupted and air travel came to a sudden halt. And it was so fascinating because we ended up being around a lot of very stressed people because they couldn't get home. And so I became a travel doula. It was like I started comforting people because that's the way I am. Helping them find the power in the situation and how they could be active in the process. They weren't victims, you know, what they could do with this. And it was just, it was a really beautiful experience to apply these life skills to a completely different situation. It was nothing to do with birth, but these people obviously needed support. And it was wonderful to be able to be there and to be able to offer that. And so they're life skills.
Yeah, I love that. Now, if someone was interested in accessing the service of a birthing doula, how would they do that? And then I guess the question that all of our listeners would like to know is, if you were fortunate enough to engage a birthing doula, how much would that cost? What does that look like?
Well, the cost of a doula, that's a really challenging question to answer, because there are many organizations throughout North America that have volunteer doula services. And so depending on the city that you live in, your city could have a volunteer organization. And so you could have access to a doula for no fee. And then there are doulas who work in private practice, and the fees range from $300 to $2,000. So there's a big, big range there in the fees. And I think one just really has to be aware of the fact that doulas are unregulated. It's an unregulated practice. So just because you pay $800 for doula service doesn't mean that you're getting a doula that is going to meet the needs that you have. And so I think as consumers, people need to be really aware that it's an unregulated practice, and they need to do their research. What I suggest to people is that to interview a number of doulas, because this is a very intimate process that you're entering with this person, and you need to trust this person at a very deep level, because they're in the very most private parts of your life and a very intimate experience that you're sharing. And so you have to have a trust with this person. It suggests that couples get a very clear vision of what type of support that they want, what's most important to them, and then to interview a number of doulas until they can find that person that they feel really fits well and can support them in what they are doing. And a lot of couples that work with me, yes, they might struggle at first with paying a fee, because our healthcare in Canada, many parts of it is free. But then when they realize the support that they're going to get, the fee becomes secondary. So doulas come from a variety of backgrounds. You can have a doula that is a massage therapist and can bring wonderful skills to the birth room. You can have a doula like myself who has a real interest in psychology and so can bring tremendous emotional support. So, you know, it depends on what is important to you, is what you would be looking for. And I think people need to know that a doula is like a guide. Giving birth, you're stepping into the unknown. Like, I mean, it's probably one of the biggest unknowns for a woman in her life. And when you step into the unknown, or at least for myself, if I'm stepping into the unknown, I want someone that can guide me in that process and can be there with me. So I'd want somebody that can stand in the face of fear themselves so that they can stand with me in my fear and not be afraid of my fear. We have to look beyond keeping mom and baby safe. Of course, that's important. That's important to everybody. Healthy mom, healthy baby. But we need to look beyond that. And I don't think that's what we're doing in our present system, is we're just looking at the physical.
And is there an organization that you're associated with?
Yes, I'm part of DONA, D-O-N-A. And if you just Google DONA, or actually the web address is dona.org, that's the association that I am certified with. On their website, they have a list of their certified doulas. And so you can type in the city and you can locate any doulas that are in that city.
I was just thinking, Karen, actually, in my practice, I ask a question of what are the most stressful and significant events in someone's life. And most mothers, at the top five, events always put the birth of their children. And so I can imagine this is such a rewarding and fulfilling job, just supporting these moms in that process. But what's the most rewarding and fulfilling part to you specifically?
That's a really big question. The favorite part of my work is that it's humbling, because I realize the power of nature, and it is just so humbling to be in the presence of a birthing woman and to stand in that power. The power is just incredible, the power of nature, the power of the masculine and the feminine working in balance together. And that, to me, is probably the most rewarding part of my work, is the being humble in that power. And the other part would be the fact that it's liberating and it's empowering, because the people that I work with, we work together. They liberate me just as much as I liberate them. We're in it together. And that is so rewarding. I live out of the city, and so when I leave the hospital and drive home from a birth, often it's in the wee hours of the morning. And so the highway is quiet, and it's just, I have that time to just be with that. And it is just such an incredible feeling to just be in that space of knowing that, yeah, I don't think there's language to describe what I'm trying to say. It's just, it's humbling and yet extremely powerful.
As I'm listening to you, I can feel the passion and I can feel the soul connection. Would you say that your role as a birthing doula is a vocation, a calling?
Definitely. Yes, it's a calling. Definitely. For me, it's not work. When my phone rings, I never say, okay, I'm going to work. It never enters my mind. I am of service. I am going to serve and to serve in whatever way I can. I think the other part about that is that with work, I have worked at things in my life, and it's always been a defined role. You go and you do. You stay within these guidelines. Doulaing is not like that. Every birth experience is different, and every birth there's incredible learning. My clients are my greatest teachers, and these little precious babies that are born are my teachers. So, no, it's not work. It's definitely a vocation. It's a calling. I just absolutely love what I do, and I just feel so honored and so grateful to be able to share my gifts with humanity.
After listening to how you describe what you do, it's a labor of love. Can you offer some tips or some guidance for a mom-to-be or someone who knows a mom-to-be on how to engage a birthing doula?
My first answer to that would be talking to your friends, talking to your care providers, especially if part of your healthcare team is from the non-medical community. They often have connections to the birthing community. And in our community, many of the doctors have connections to doulas as well. Of course, talking to your friends, because we trust our friends, and if our friends are going to recommend somebody that they had, I would highly recommend interviewing that person, because your friends know you quite well. But if you don't have those connections, then the internet, of course. And if you are looking on the internet, you can look through organizations that certify doulas. So I mentioned one earlier as DONA, D-O-N-A. There's another one, CAPPA, C-A-P-P-A, and there's another organization that certifies doulas, and it's Birthing From Within. Those are the three main ones that I know of. And so if you Google those, they all have lists of doulas that are certified through them, and you can find doulas that way. Or you can just type in, if you're living in Halifax, you type in Doulas Halifax. wherever you're living, type in doulas and then the name of your city, and something will most likely come up.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there's an association, in Nova Scotia we have a doula association. So if you type in the state or the province that you're living in and doula association, something might come up with that.
So, Karen, if people want to contact you specifically, whether they're locally and they are pregnant or becoming pregnant, or maybe people outside of Nova Scotia that just want to contact you, how could they contact you?
Through my website, passionateaboutbirth.ca, and my contact information is there. And I am happy to talk to people around the world. I had the pleasure of communicating with and actually ended up doing some birth preparation with a couple from Italy last year that happened to be traveling through Nova Scotia and had looked me up previously. And so I had an opportunity to do some birth preparation with them while they were here vacationing.
And Karen, do you feel like you have a book in you? Am I putting you on the spot? Yes, I am.
We're seeing a book in you,
we're
Karen.
We're seeing a book.
I do. And I will let you know as soon as it's published. How about
right.
that?
That sounds good. And as soon as it's published, Glenn and I hope that you'll come back on the show with us.
I will be happy to do that.
Yeah, or even before it's published, right, Glenna?
Exactly.
Anytime.
I would be happy to join you anytime. I've thoroughly enjoyed this time together. I just, as you can tell, I'm passionate, and I'm just on a high right now, a high of passion.
Well, Karen, thank you very, very much for your time. I know our listeners, especially people who are in the birthing or preparing for the birthing process, they can listen to what you have to share live as they're listening now, or they can always go back to the Blog Talk Radio archives or on iTunes and simply replay our time together or use the link and email it to their friends. What do you think, Glenna?
That's fascinating. I could ask her another 50 questions, I think. So I'd love if you would come back.
Yeah. And what we'll do for our listeners, we'll take the questions that Karen was kind enough to answer, and we'll post them on our What's Your Prescription for Balance Facebook page. Well, that's it for this evening. I'd like to thank Glenna, my co-host, and also Karen Reed for spending some wonderful time together in Nova Scotia. Have a good evening. Bye for now.
As promised, we're always thinking of ways to bring you a fresh new perspective. Check out this lineup of our newest shows. The Amethyst Oracle, Divination with a Queer Twist, featuring Firefly Willow's LIVE favorite, Heisey Lutmers, and his co-host, Charlie Harrington, on the second Tuesday evening each month. A Shamanic Life, hosted by John Carosella, on the first and third Tuesday evenings each month. The brand new Embracing Change, The Joy of a New Path, with career coach Ivan Teams and John Carosella, the fourth Tuesday evening of each month. What's Your Prescription for Balance, with Mildred Lynn McDonald and her co-host, Dr. Glenna Calder, the first Thursday afternoon each month. And Evolve, with Robin White Turtle Lisney, the third Thursday afternoon each month. We're excited. Give us a listen as we continue to create new and entertaining ways for you to shine your inner light. Join us at Firefly Willows, LIVE. Thank you for joining us. This program was brought to you by Firefly Willows, LIVE. We hope you enjoyed the show. This is Deb Carosella. Please join us next time on Firefly Willows, LIVE for Healing Conversations with Mildred Lynn McDonald, Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m.